And welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
Oh boy, okay, just going through these months, trying to get the perfect lesson plan for these kids. Jeez, how the heck? I mean, that's kind of the one thing I really kind of, like, I struggle with. I mean, yes, you want to go, my cohorts want to play through the game, but for me, I just want to get the perfect lesson plan for these my kids.
Well, while I respect you wanting to do right by your students, there is such thing as going too dang slow. And we're not blazing through the game. I spent, up until the end of my run, which we'll be talking about in a second, I barely skipped anything. I went through every exploration. I did as many battles as I could. I went to many seminars, full-blown lesson plans. I did everything, and it still took me 45 hours to beat the game. I'm not going slow. I'm not blazing through this thing. You're just going slow.
Excuse me that I like the journey instead of the destination.
I love the journey!
Excuse me, princess.
Ugh, fine. Speaking of princess, Talia Styler is here too.
I'll take it as a compliment. It took me 82 hours to finish my...
Wait, say that again?
It took me 82 hours to finish my Golden Deer playthrough.
Wow.
That's impressive. Wow.
Now, I can say, and we're going to talk about this in a second, but I can say that difficulty level definitely is adding to the hour time, because I feel like I'm going slower in my Black Eagles run,
which I
have on the harder difficulty. So, yeah, but we're talking about that because, ladies and gentlemen, we are officially in week two of our Fire Emblem Three Houses run. We were, you know, well enough along last week, but now we are much deeper into the game. Oh, I'm sorry. Some of us are much deeper into the game, and we got a lot to share with you. So we're going to get it all started off with, what have you been playing? Fire Emblem Three Houses. Duh. Okay, we've been playing other things, but we've all agreed that we are going to talk solely about this. So we're going to do two parts, not unlike the game itself. Spoilers. So we're going to have a much more detailed discussion about part one and the things that's been going on in our three runs. And then Will is going to leave us because he has not finished part one. And then me and Tyler are going to talk about our part twos of the game without going too much into spoilers, but going spoiler enough. So if you choose to not want to listen, I recommend skipping ahead about 10 minutes, maybe 15, and then waiting, going straight into the news section. Okay? So, part one, which let's just call it the school section, because that's much more of a focus in the first one than the second part.
Part
the second
one.
Part.
White
so,
clouds.
Right.
I think it's called White Clouds across every...
Yeah, it's White Cloud.
Yeah,
I never understood the
clouds.
Title. I mean, I liked the moon, the Red Wolf Moon, Guardian Moon. But I was like, why was one part called White Clouds and the other one called yada yada yada? And was like, and the way he said it, White Clouds, Verdant Moon, Unexpected Beginning, Inevitable Destiny, whatever it was called. It's Fire Emblem. It has these lofty titles.
What was the Blue Lion's route? Azure Moon.
Yeah, Azure Moon.
Yeah,
Azure Moon. Yeah.
Golden Deer was Verdant Wind.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that. So, but yeah, anyway, part one. So again, I played Blue Lions, Will was Black Eagles, and Tyler was Golden Deer. Glad I said all the names right. And I was still getting used to it by the time I was getting done with part one, with like the schooling thing, but I was at least getting the hang of it. And I was honestly wondering at one point, I think we mentioned this last week, like, when was part two going to start? I think I'm pretty sure last week I had just gotten into part two, I think you and me did, Tyler.
Yeah.
And so it was like, when was this going to end? And then we get to part two, which I'll get to in a second. And it was like, oh yeah, now I see where this is going. But I still just love this game. I mean, I have just started my second run with going Black Eagles this time with Edelgard and crew. And in part one, it's night and day. So, wait a minute. If there's three houses, wouldn't that be day, night, and dusk? Or
yeah.
Okay, I can roll with that. But, for example, Blue Lions, when you meet the Blue Lions, they all have their personalities on full display. But they feel like a unit. Okay, they are unified under Dimitri's reign, even with Sylvain hitting on girls and, you know, Felix being a jerk. But when I got to the Black Eagles, they're like the most dysfunctional family,
right?
Ever.
They totally are.
And it just blew me away. And that's, again, we mentioned like characters a lot last week. the characters are what make this work, and if they were all the same, just with slightly different, slightly tropey to start personalities, which they are all tropes and not one way or the other to start, it wouldn't have been entertaining. But I am like expecting this, single file line-ish, kind of like, oh, we all respect Edelgard and blah, 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 blah. Oh, no. Linhart's going off to sleep. Bernadette's like, don't look at me. Mercedes, or not Mercedes, Dorothea is already hitting on me.
Petra is
not,
Petra.
Petra, I said Ingrid, meant Petra. Petra is already, being Starfire and everything. And it's just like, what is going on? And even Edelgard is like, we're not usually this rowdy. I don't believe you, Edelgard. I don't believe you. I love it. And I mean, I ironically enough, because I have a Comic-Con this weekend, and so I've been doing work most of the week so I can have my weekend free-ish. And so I barely had time to get into Black Eagles after I beat the game, and I have my review up on the website, 4.5 out of 5. Only because of how we do the scaling, Tyler. And, I want to dive more into this because I want to know these characters more because I love the experiences that I had in part one with my Blue Lions, and I want to see how I relate to all these other characters. And it's just hilarious how different they all are, which only means that once I get to the Golden Deer and I probably fall in love with them, Tyler's going to be like, dude, I told you! You should have gotten Golden Deers to start!
The Golden Deer are amazing. Go ahead, Will. You're
And
a
yeah,
blue
because
lion or golden. Sorry.
yeah, on that subject of the Golden Deer's popularity, apparently, like, including the voice actors, like, kind of the voice act of Claude is just going on a bit of a crusade of making the Golden Deer the most popular house in Fire Emblem. I mean, first it was Edelgard that everyone statistically chose Black Eagles, but now Claude seems to be one to try to like get that popularity vote of the Electoral College.
Yeah, I had that same, like, I'm doing Black Eagles for my second playthrough too, and it was like the first day was so exciting because you're just like you're meeting these new characters for the first time, even though you've met them before. Right away you can tell that the house that you choose will really color your gameplay experience. Like these characters that I really didn't know, like Ferdinand, I really didn't like him when I talked to him around the monastery. But in that first cutscene, I was like, oh, you know what? This guy's kind of cool, actually. I could see myself really, really enjoying this guy. And then conversely, I found that Claude, who's like one of my all-time favorite characters, he's so great. I didn't really like his dialogue before the practice battle that you do to start the game. I was like, yeah, they're like, oh, I'm a schemer. And like, he doesn't come across, he has so much more depth in the Golden Deer round. He never just seemed like, oh, I'm a schemey guy. But for some reason, I was like, ah, I don't know. Like, the lord that you choose, you will get to know on a really personal level. And
Oh,
I
yeah.
think that's great. That makes every one of your playthroughs much more interesting.
Yeah. And, I looking at Dimitri, knowing what I know about Dimitri, you see the hints of what he really is and what he's trying to not be. And then with Edelgard, I always saw her as this, kind of stuck up person. I'm better. She's the loner, as they noted in Fire Emblem Heroes. And now I'm getting to know her a little bit more, and it's like, she's trying so hard to be this certain way. Like, I just got her C support with Dorothea, who I had recruited to the Blue Lions because I really liked the character, and she was one of my best magic users by far. But so that's really hard knowing that I had her at like peak level, and now I'm grinding with her again. I'm like, come on, Dorothea, level up! But like her C support with Edelgard is, by and large, one of the best support conversations I've had. And I'm pretty sure you know why, Will. And it's not just because Edelgard shows a side of herself that I didn't expect. Dorothea sings. Like, I
Yes.
had
Oh,
her.
yeah. I love that scene. I love that scene.
I
Yes. Yes.
had Dorothea the entire time. Oh, not the entire time, but like a majority of the time. I had her A level with pretty much every character she could A level with. And even Manuela never sang a note. Gets with Edelgard or C conversation, belts out these beautiful operatic sound off the cuff. She basically improvises an opera for Edelgard, and like Edelgard actually gets embarrassed because she's like, I hope that this opera of me comes way after I'm gone. It's beautiful and I love it. And like, again, I want to know these more of these characters, which is why I'm slightly sad I have this con, because I can't bring this, I mean, I could bring the Switch with me, but I don't want to because I got to focus on my job. but I want to learn more about these characters, and that's how addicting this game is. It's, you know, even though part one, more or less, we all found out that is basically the same between all of us, you know, part two is gonna be extremely different, and I don't want to rush to part one because I know that's half the experience with getting to know these characters. So
now you know how I feel.
Yes. Well, no, you don't know how we feel though, because we're waiting for you to keep going so we can find out
I
more.
Guess it's not about the destination; it's about the journey.
There is such thing as taking a journey too long. I mean, are you going to be like Samurai Jack and wait 50 years before killing Aku?
Well, again, remember.
Whoa! Spoilers for Samurai Jack. I thought we said there was.
We said no Fire Emblem spoilers. All of the things are out there.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
It should be. Anyway, but Will, what has been your favorite part about Part 1 so far?
Ah, oh, man, Part 1 is, again, it's just kind of, like, it's more or less that setup of, like, building up the entire characters. Like, but I think the consensus of many people who play this game is just basically, like, when you get these C rank, the support conversations with any characters, it's, like, just so interesting. I mean, like many people, I just like to like spend like almost like 30 minutes, even to an hour, just watching these support cutscenes, just to like really know about the world and like how these interact with each other. Not just solely on just like one house, but how like Ash and Marianne or like Ingrid with Petra, like or how it just all these interconnect with each other with regard to their own personal struggles, their likes, their dislikes, just like their behaviors. That's one thing I really like about it. It's just so much. Flesh out the world so much through these support conversations, like I really do not mind, and like that's kind of the one thing that why I'm taking my time with it is just like I want them to like get these support conversations as best of their right could, so I could just basically watch them and just like get to know the characters more than usual before the time skip, because I can only imagine how it is after when like again personality changes, what development there is just that's kind of one thing I like about it, the support conversations.
We would tell you about part two, but that would be spoilers. All right, Tyler, how about you? What's your favorite part of part one?
My favorite part of part one has to be the battle of the lion and or the eagle and lion when all three armies clash for the first time. It's very it's a really cool battle. The gimmick being that you have to try to kill the most units, so like the three armies are fighting and you have to try to move fast, because if Dimitri kills more characters than you do, then you don't get a reward at the end. So it added a nice little layer of strategy into it, and I think it really kind of showcased like the tragedy of the game. I won't really go more into it than that, because then you're kind of looking at the second half, but that to me, I loved that battle. I thought it was a ton of fun. I really liked the map, but the way it kind of links into the rest of the plot after beating the game, I find I love that part even more.
That was a favorite of mine too, although I had no trouble with my Blue Lions team just dominating everybody, but that's just me. And you know, it was that storyline was good. There were because I was in the Blue Lions storyline, the Lenato rebellion meant a lot more, because A was in my region and B, Ash was the adopted son of the Lord who rebelled, and so you get a little bit more of a personal connection there. But like that was another standout. And then some of the paralogues, again, the Ingrid Dorothea paralogue was just so hilariously awesome. Dorothea is a treat. I've already sent out a warning to all the female characters in the Black Eagles. I'm like, you have to live up to Dorothea if you want me to marry you, because I already had the A support with Dorothea and my Blue Lions run, but I didn't marry her because I knew I'd get her again in Black Eagles. So I'm like, if you're gonna beat Dorothea, you gotta step up. All right.
Dorothea is such a good character.
She is.
I love her too. She was underwhelming for me down the stretch of my Golden Deer playthrough, like on the battlefield. I mean, she was fine. She played a role, but just her supports are all wonderful. But
yes,
I wonder
yes.
how on the Black Eagles her plot will go, because she's really just like sad. And, like, you never really get to see exactly why, on at least on the Golden Deer run, because she's not an integral part of the plot. But I wonder how that changes in the Black Eagles.
Well she's...
I don't get the joke. It's basically, like, yeah, once you hit up to her B ranks, like, and, of course, like, have her connect with all the other members of the Black Eagles, like, it really, like, expands more. And, like, while, I understand, like, some, I think you two probably, like, paired up with Manuela, which kind of explains a bit more of her story, well, why she joined the monastery. Like, once you like have her talk with the other mates, especially with like Ferdinand, like you get to know more why she's like she is that way.
Yeah, I did get part of that experience with Phoenix, or sorry, Felix and Sylvain and even Ingrid and of course Manuela. But yeah, she is easily one of the deepest characters in the game. That's why I appreciate her so much. And yeah, so I right now my potential spouses are either Dorothea or Petra because of the Starfire thing. But I don't know. We'll have to see. But again, I just love these characters, and it's so much fun to see them grow and to actually give them a chance, Tyler.
I could say the same to you. You're going to once you play the Golden Deer route, you will see. I think that you'll see why characters like Bernadetta and Mercedes were just. I'm not super interested in them right away because I felt like every character in the Golden Deer, aside from maybe Raphael, had significant like right away. They clicked with me. They're such colorful personalities, and I think it's because they come from all different walks of life, whereas the lions and the eagles are mostly nobles. And I think that as such, those kind of routes, at least from what I've experienced with the Black Eagles, it seems like a little more political right away. Whereas the Golden Deer, I just those characters are they feel like they're kids and like they're colorful and unique and wonderful. Lysithia, I think that she might, her and Lorenz are both just, I mean, they're unbelievably good characters. And that's not even just for a Fire Emblem game, like just in general, they're so well written and just the twists on their characters are brilliant. I have to recruit Lysithia again in my Black Eagles run. That's my first goal because I love her. She is amazing.
Yeah, I'm in an interesting position because, like I said, I recruited Dorothea to the Blue Lions because I really liked her character, and then I unintentionally got Catherine. I did not mean to recruit her. I was just, hey, let's recruit you. I know you'll say no, and she goes, oh yeah, I'll join you. I'm like, okay. So and then I got Manuela just because I like Veronica Taylor and she really won me over with the character. But so this run I'm trying not to get any of the Golden Deer because I want to save them for my last run. And then I'm not gonna get Manuela this time around. I'm gonna try and get Shamir and maybe Cyril because there's just something with that kid that I want to learn more
Oh,
about him.
I hated Cyril.
I
I
do.
hated
I
Cyril.
did.
I sat him on the bench and I never
Really?
looked at him. I hated that kid.
Yeah, I want. I didn't like. I don't like him either. But I want to give him a chance, Tyler.
He's so
And
snooty. Oh, I gave him a
he is.
chance.
He's snooty. He's. I thought he was gonna kill some. I thought he. I mean, I don't know if this actually happens. I honestly do not. But I thought he was gonna kill Rhea just because he keeps talking about how I have to protect her, and I'm like, well, that means you're either incredibly loyal because you're a family member. That's not true, or you're just trying to get close to her too, so you can kill her. We'll find out, I suppose.
That's a character I think you have to give a chance to. And I can't, I'm excited for the reason I chose Black Eagles for my second run through. I was really torn. I think the Blue Lions, I like them more than I like the Black Eagles. I think Dimitri's really, really cool. And I just
He
love his
is.
appearance. I love watching his combat animations.
Yeah.
But I chose the Black Eagles because I need to see Rhea in a different light. The Golden Deer route made me, I just love Rhea. And like I could, you, that's honestly not a spoiler. People will walk away with different opinions. I loved her after that route. And I want to see her in a different light because a lot of people hate her online. I think she's unbelievably cool.
because not too long ago, I actually managed to go and get her C rank as well, and oh boy, I can see why people like her. I mean, again, she's also another Onee-san type, especially with going to the conversation ch choices you get with her. It's
Yeah.
pretty interesting, but I see why people like her. Yeah.
I gotta try and get my C conversation with her. I might just try and shower her with gifts and go from there. But I can say, Tyler, if you want a different look at Rhea, don't go Blue Lions because of something I'll tell you in a part two in our spoiler chat. So, but yeah, part one in the game really did set up things really, really well. And then, oh my gosh, part two. Will, get out of here.
Okay, I'm gonna go and continue on 3 houses. All right, I'm out of
Yeah, maybe you'll catch up and then you can jump
here. Yeah, that I don't think we got 2 years to wait until
in.
that. So Will's gone. So we are going about to go into the spoil more a little more spoiler filled. Now, at the request of myself and of Tyler, we are not going to go too deep into what happened to the Blue Lions or the Golden Deer Run because we don't want to spoil it for each other, because this is definitely a game you want to need to experience. But we are going to talk more about some of the lighter spoilers that, if you are in part two, you already know about. So let's talk about the big one, Tyler. Edelgard's the Flame Emperor.
That plot twist, my roommate came out the other day and was like, he was like shaking, and I just knew because I was, oh, he's playing Fire Emblem. He knows. Now he's in on this too. That plot twist was so incredible. And I just can't wait to experience it from your side, because he did the same thing you said last week. He said the Blue Lion's Path was worth it just for that cutscene when Dimitri finds out that Edelgard's the Flame Emperor.
So I teased it last week, but here's what happened. So they hint heavily that Edelgard's the Flame Emperor, and I'm thinking, oh, this is a twist. All right, someone else, because the reveal slightly is that during a conversation, Dimitri finds a dagger, and he re recognizes it as a dagger that he gave Edelgard when they were children, and because they're brother sister, well, stepbrother and sister, but still.
What?
Well, you didn't know that?
No!
Oops.
That's crazy. I mean, no, it's fine. I mean, this is partly spoiler discussion. That doesn't mean anything. That's so cool.
They are, yes, they are step siblings, and but they didn't know it at first, so they were just friends, and something happens to make Edelgard leave, and Dimitri gives her a dagger. Fast forward to part near the end of part one, the Flame Emperor is having a conversation, and we catch him, but they just teleport because they're bad guys, and the dagger is found. And so I'm thinking, oh no, it's not Edelgard, okay? It's like it's the evil uncle or something like that, and it's gonna be a plot twist, and Edelgard will save Dimitri. Oh, how could I ever think it was you, Edelgard? Oh no, it's Edelgard, and she doesn't care that you know. So what does Dimitri do? He loses his gosh dang mind and Mortal Kombat's a guy's skull with his bare hand. Like, seriously, the camera is on Dimitri's face, warped in anger, and all you hear is crunch.
Oh my gosh.
It's beautiful, and
I
that's
didn't
just
that see that's crazy that that never came up in the Golden Deer that they were related. That
that's
never
fascinating.
came up.
I'm sorry to spoil that for you. I
Oh no,
honestly
that's
am.
fine. I mean, listen, it's a spoiler discussion, so
Yeah, spoiler
we're gonna
discussion.
these things are gonna happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean that's exciting to me. Yeah, because in the Golden Deer route, Claude's pretty neutral. Like he actually is cool with the Flame Emperor, sort of. So when he finds out it's Edelgard, he's just like, "Whoa, that was crazy! I didn't expect that." And I'm like, "Yeah, Claude, I didn't expect that either." And we both look at each other shocked, and then we're like, "All right, well, time to move on." Because Claude's very suspicious of the church. He's also because to me, right? So I was with Claude because Rhea seems so sketchy. Like she's
She
just
is.
obviously super sketchy. Her portrait is very unsettling. All her when she loses her when she gets angry, she's just merciless. So I'm thinking she wants me to sit on this throne and she's about to like murder me for whatever reason. She's gonna kill me and we're gonna have to fight her. And that's not what happens.
Nope.
Like the Flame Emperor comes in and she's like, "This is weird. Why is nothing happening?" And then you have to fight them and then you defeat her and she gets unmasked, and it's just my jaw hit the ground. I could not believe that they tricked me that badly. I had no idea.
Yeah, it was again. Yeah, I'm definitely in Blue Lions, especially Rhea comes off as so sketchy, and you have no reason to think she's good because your dad doesn't like her. All
Right,
right.
exactly. He's like, "We got to get out of this church."
Yeah, it's like what was Lady Rhea thinking? Watch out for Lady Rhea this, Lady Rhea that, and then like they have these scenes with her, and I'm like, is she my mom? And I just don't know it. And then that wasn't the case apparently, and
Right. Yeah,
it.
that's the, that twist with how am I related to her? Because I was sure that she was my mom for a minute, but then I was like, you know what? I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
And the same thing for Geralt. Like right away, you're like, I'm obviously not this guy's son, but
Well,
like,
I mean, I mean, Ike didn't look like Grail, but we
but they
found.
were clearly father and son. I just right away felt like we're clearly not related. And yet, I mean, in Golden Deer, I think we are related.
Yeah.
Like he was my
Yeah.
dad.
It's weird stuff, but
Yeah.
no, I don't. I definitely need to play your Golden Deer run or see how this run with Edelgard goes, because in I can just tell you this is slight spoilers, but in part two, You don't see Rhea.
Really?
Dude, what are you doing here?
You said unmute yourself.
What?
I did not
Nobody
say
ever
that.
said that.
I never said that once. How could you even hear that? You're supposed to be muted.
Data vanished.
I said back, go to Slack, and I'll tell you there. I didn't unmute. So what did? Why
Oh
didn't I
my
say that? I bet
gosh.
he's looking at the wrong.
Poor Will.
Oh,
He's.
Will, look at the time slot. That said 8:31. Moron. As I was saying, in the Blue Lions run, you do not see Rhea at all.
No way.
Way.
He's a
And
huge character in
it
the Golden
did,
Deer second
which is
half.
why in my review I noted that my ending, which I will not spoil, was slightly rushed because they kept talking about Rhea and Rhea never shows up. She's in text and that's it. And like that remained. And then you say like she's an integral part of the Golden Deer storyline. No need to tell me more. You said enough there. But and it's just like, okay, so what's she gonna be like in Edelgard's run? I would ask Will, but he hasn't found out. So, yeah, but yeah, Rhea is definitely one of the more complex characters. And then Will, you better not be listening to this. Okay. Then of course at the end of part one, we got the other reveal about Rhea. Go ahead.
Dragon form, Rhea?
She's a dragon!
Yeah.
Oh my god, I didn't even think of that. I'm
Me
like, we
neither.
even talked about how Sothis looked like Tiki, and of course Sothis and Rhea are clearly descendants, or ancestor descendant, and I'm like, oh, I didn't even think. Oh, she's a dragon. Of course she's a dragon.
You know who? You don't know who Rhea is.
No.
Oh my gosh! I cannot wait to play them because I just wonder what you know that I don't.
I don't know
Now,
much.
I will say that I've read a lot of places that said that you need to play all these paths to get the full story.
You do.
There's not a ton of mysteries that I don't know about. I felt like there are some things that I don't know about for sure, that you would only see on other paths. But a lot of like the mysteries introduced in part one, I felt were answered by the end of my Golden Deer run. Like I that could have been a
Fascinating.
yeah. Now,
Well,
I will say, like you said, that your ending was rushed. My ending was kind of rushed. The final boss, will not spoil, really came out of nowhere. Like it just came out of nowhere who the final boss was on Golden Deer. And it was cool. Like I enjoyed the fight. It was a really good map. But yeah, I mean, that was a little could have been developed a little bit better. I would imagine that the Blue Lions and definitely the Black Eagles will have a great run because for those who don't know, the Flame Emperor is opposed to the Church of Saros and hates Rhea and all those characters. Is trying to destroy that world. So I would have to think that Rhea is probably the final boss of the Black Eagles run. Maybe it's a different church thing, but that's just my guess at this point.
Yeah, and then we find out, and this is slightly spoilerish, there isn't three paths in this game. There are four. What? Oh my gosh. That actually makes me glad I didn't do the Black Eagles first, because I'm like, wait a minute, do I have to play Black Eagles again just to do the other path? It's like, oh, no, now I'm going to do Blue Lions, Black Eagles, Golden Deer, then do the church path, because, yeah, the fourth path is the church, which I love. Because even if it's not technically different, which I'm not sure how it can't be different with a path like that.
Oh, it's different.
Yeah. Oh, you already know?
I mean, yeah. So you can side with Edelgard. This is part one, so
Yeah,
I
it's
think it's
part
all
one.
right. So the way it splits is if you pick the Black Eagles, Edelgard will ask you the chapter before it's revealed that she's the Flame Emperor. Hey, would you come with me back to the Adrestian Empire? And if you have a C plus support with her, you can say yes. And then after you beat the Flame Emperor chapter, which I assume Edelgard's just unavailable for, then Rhea will say, kill Edelgard. She says that in every route. And then you can say, kill Edelgard or I must protect Edelgard. And whichever one you pick there will split your path.
I'll remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh my gosh. So yeah, now I will say I do want to answer your question about what other mysteries are there. The Blue Lions mysteries, obviously I just accidentally spoiled one of them, which is a relationship between Dimitri and Edelgard. And again, I apologize for that.
No, I mean, that's seriously fine. I mean, it's part one, so.
Yeah. But there are other mysteries to Dimitri's backstory and a certain other character who you might guess who it is. But their histories are a lot more dark than you might expect. And so there's that mystery, and it does tie back to Edelgard, ironically enough, though she technically does not have anything to do with it, technically. So
That's a crazy how much content is in this game that
it
in the
is.
Golden Deer route, something as important as them being siblings or adopted siblings did not, or step siblings did not come up. I
Yeah,
mean,
that's shocking.
that's wild.
That's why I said it, because I thought you knew.
Do you know like what Claude's background is?
No.
Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating.
So.
I highly recommend so it depends on the order that you want to do it, but it seems to me as though the Blue Lions and the Black Eagles are more in sync. So if you're doing a one-time playthrough and you're just, I'm just going to beat this game one time, I would strongly suggest the Golden Deer, not just because I picked them, but as I said, you do get satisfying answers to a lot of your questions, basically all of them. And then if you're like us and you're addicted, you'll play them all anyway.
Oh yeah.
So
Like I said,
matter.
I'm doing Black Eagles now, and then I'm going to do Golden Deer, and I'll see where I am by that point because they'll be getting close to Astral Chain.
Yeah.
And then the moment I'm done with that, and hopefully before Link's Awakening, I'll do the church run and we'll go from there. What I might do, just to save me some time, is I might save the game
That's smart.
separately.
Yeah, save it over right when you have to make the choice.
Exactly. And I'll do
Yeah.
one run with Edelgard and one run with the church. And that way it saved me some time.
The
But
Edelgard run is shorter than the church run, too. The
say that again?
Edelgard run is the shortest. It's only, I think, 18 chapters, maybe 19. Golden
Really?
Deer is 22, and so is the Blue Lions, so, or 21, 22, I can't remember.
Wow.
Yeah. So
Interesting.
the
What about
Edelgard
the
run's pretty
church?
short. Church is 20. It's one less than the Lions and.
Well, I mean, that's not bad, I suppose. I mean,
Let's talk. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
go ahead, please, please, go ahead.
Let's talk about marriage before we bring Will back in here. The way the game handles marriage.
Yeah, I am. Okay, I'm of two minds on this, and here's why. I like how they handled it in regards to the main character.
Yes.
You build up your A supports, and then there's a point in the game where do we can spoil that. I mean,
Yeah.
it's not earth shattering. Okay, before the final mission, wherever you are, you go to the grave of Geralt, and you hear him say that I hope you find someone to give the ring to, and then all of your A supports, male or female. And I found out Black Eagles wise who can be your male companion if you're a male Byleth, which I found fascinating, but still. You can pick which one you marry, and then after the final battle, you are met by your future wife or husband in the Goddess Tower, which is a
It
reference
was
to
so
Part.
great.
It was so great. And then you have this whole conversation about, each other, and then you get married, and then they go full anime where they have like a splash color screen of your character
I
with
love
you.
that character art for Leone. It was very cute.
It was curious, and Mercedes was the same way, and I even looked up Manuela's because I was just dang curious,
I did
and
too. Yeah, she's like leaning on you.
she that was adorable. Manuela won me over. I mean, you guys remember when I first found out about Manuela, and then where I am now is just she's one of my favorites.
Yeah,
But
Manuel is great.
yeah, she's great. But so like I liked that because it made it more material. No, that's not the right word. It made it more memorable
Yeah.
because in Fates and Awakening, it was just, hey, want to get married? Yeah, let's get married. And then that was it. Oh, by the way, here's our future child from another dimension or timeline or both. And but here it's like, the battles are over. Now let's get married. I liked that.
Yeah, it felt authentic. It felt
Yes,
very tied
authentic.
to story. And yeah, I thought the cutscene was really cute too, and the idea that you decide before the final battle added a little bit of weight to it, because I picked Leone, and she was so good for me that in the final battle I had her just kind of clearing off one whole side, and but she got near death, and I was like, oh my God, I'm about to lose. Like, I could have rewound, but I was like, I
Yeah.
have to be careful because I'm about to marry Leone. Like, I
Yeah, I
can't let her die.
my Manuela did die in my final battle. It was a series of circumstances because of the layout of the map. The final battle for Edelgard's or sorry, the Blue Lions was very difficult, especially with how Edelgard was
Yeah.
such a tease. And but yeah, Manuela died. I'm like, no, not Manuela. Mercedes died, and why did I say Manuela? Oh, I was talking about Manuela, that's why. And so she died. I'm like, oh, rewind, rewind.
Yeah.
So like, don't can't lose my wife. I'm just about to get with her.
Yeah.
But now that being said, I wish we had the freedom with Awakening and Fates in regards to the other characters. And I say that because when I was building up my relationships, both intentional and unintentional, I had in my mind who I wanted to marry with who.
Yeah.
I wanted Sylvain with Dorothea because they were adorable, and their A support basically had them getting together.
Yeah.
And then I unintentionally had I had a Ingrid and Dimitri. I won because they seemed like the perfect match. But then throughout the game, Dorothea and Felix got an A rank, and then Ingrid and Sylvain got an A rank. And then all of a sudden, I'm reading the end credits, and it goes, Dorothea and Felix got together, and they lived yada yada yada. And then Sylvain and Ingrid got together. They had 9 children. Okay, and none of them had crests, but they all loved them all the same. And they're like, well, that's beautiful. And then I read about Dimitri's that I don't want to spoil, and they put him in a retainer way with Dedeu. And his ending was both beautiful and heartbreaking, but it's just like I wanted him with Ingrid and I wanted Dorothea with Sylvain, so
Yeah,
what happened exactly?
I hear you on that, and I wish the game explained it. But let me play devil's advocate. I like the system, and I agree with you. I think that it's not perfect, and I totally understand why people who don't like it don't like it. I did the same exact thing. I wanted Hilda with Claude, and I wanted Hilda with Claude so badly that so Lawrence, right, is an awesome character. Lawrence is an amazingly great character. I cannot stress that enough. You guys have to give him a chance. He wants to basically marry someone who is also a noble, so he can advance his family's position. He's all about advancing his family's position. He comes from a good place. Him and Hilda in their A support, Hilda like proposes to him, and Lawrence, being that he's grown up, is like, I'm interested, but you know what? I'm not quite so sure. Like, let me get back to you on that. And I didn't want Hilda to marry Lawrence because I just didn't think that they were a good couple. I did think Hilda and Claude were a good couple, however. So I had them fighting together constantly at the end, and they did not get the paired ending. Instead, Lawrence and Claude had a paired ending, which was phenomenal. Like, here's the thing. This is where the positive spin comes in. I would have never had, like, one, I think it's cool that you can have friendships that end in paired endings rather than just they got married. I love the idea
I
that,
had that on my side too. I had a BFF ending twice,
yeah.
apparently.
Yeah, and I think those are fascinating, and just it showed me that ending for Claude and Lawrence was perfect. I mean, it was everything about their two stories come together. And I was a little emotional after I read it. I was like, oh my, these two rivals, the way that they conclude in their paired ending, it's beautiful. So I do think that you get these pleasant surprises that way, endings that you didn't want, but that end up you that you that you get, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is like a Christmas gift that I didn't know I wanted, but it turns out it's my favorite thing in the whole game. So I see the positives to that. I have to say, Claude, I had to look up Claude's endings because he's just awesome. His and Lysithia's ending, I was at the gym and I was exhausted after doing cardio, so I sat down and I was doing some reading. I literally started bawling when I read it. It is so heartbreaking and beautiful, but heartbreaking. I was honestly, I'm still in my feelings about it because Lysithia, oh my gosh. Can we talk about characters just a tiny bit?
Okay, since I'm probably not going to pair them together, more than likely for one reason or another, by
Yes.
all means, spoil it for me.
Lysithia has two crests and nobody else does, and there's a story related reason to that.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that is why her hair is white, because it's unnatural, and she's going to die extremely young. And Claude has these huge ambitions, right? And he drops everything. He drops everything to save her in the end. And like, I just don't know how to deal with that because it's almost like his whole quest, like Byleth still becomes the hero. So
Yeah.
it's still a good future for Fodlan. But Claude, he gives up all of his dreams for her. And it's just so sad, but so beautiful because he finds a way to save her. And it's like, ah, no, like she's not guaranteed to get saved. I will say that. Like some endings, she does die young. And like Claude just gives up everything. He gives up everything to save her, and I thought that was so beautiful. It really was.
All right, well, since you're gonna do that, I want to spoil Dimitri Dedeu. All
Yeah.
right, so throughout the story, Dedeu is this loyal retainer to Dimitri for a reason I don't want to spoil. But apparently, if Dimitri does not get married, what they talk about is that Dimitri has a long reign as the king of Fergus.
Fergus.
Fergus. And eventually he gets ill and dies. And it's stated that while he was ill, Dudu was with him. And then when he dies, Dudu stands by his grave every day to watch over it. And
Oh my
then
God.
when he dies, they bury Dudu next to Dimitri.
That's so sad.
It is.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah,
All
the
right.
writing in this game is so good. And like I wish I could tell you guys how to get the paired endings. I don't think anybody's truly figured it out yet. Like if you want to, I'm sure there's a way to match make, but it's not explicit at all. But I think the surprise of those endings works nicely.
It is a surprise, but it's just like what I know that I got Sylvain and Dorothea before I got Sylvain and Ingrid, and they put Ingrid and him together, and then, but in reverse, I got Felix and Dorothea first, but then Felix and Annette second, and I love the Felix and Annette pairing, and yet they put him with Dorothea, so it feels a little random, but very small complaint in the grand scheme of things. So go check out my review again. I get a 4.5 out of 5. This game is just so amazing. Just go play it, dang it. All right. So we've kept Will out of here long enough. Well, welcome back, Will.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. I've just
Yeah.
actually been more or less grinding while you were talking.
That see, there you go. See, it's the journey, Will. It's the journey.
Hey,
So
I will stand by that statement. I
I
am proud of that
know.
statement.
All right. Anyway, so we do have other things to talk about aside from Fire Emblem. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. Okay, I lied. We're going to talk about Fire Emblem some more because the Fire Emblem DLC has officially been more or less revealed. And here's how it's going to work. We already apparently got the first piece of DLC via outfits for Byleth and Byleth, which I didn't know about, but whatever. Can I just note that I love how they changed the outfits for male and female Byleth just in the default? You know how
Oh
they look like different characters. Like I, for
Yes.
whatever reason, I love female Byleth leggings. That just seems like a really cool detail.
You are a
Yeah.
good man of culture, my friend. You are a man of culture.
That's why I'm the host. And but yeah, so we already got that. And then on, let's see, October 31st ish, we're gonna get additional auxiliary maps, helpful in-game support items, and more. Which I approve of because another, I didn't mention this in my review, but the auxiliary maps get so repetitive when
They
it's the
do.
same map
Oh,
over and over over
yes.
again. I mean,
Yes.
how many
Yes.
times can I fight a demonic beast in that same bloody city? I mean, my gosh.
Yep. Yeah. That
Yes,
battle in
yes,
the
yes.
kingdom. How many times? It's. I mean,
Yeah.
I was there like 6 times at least.
Okay, so that's wave two. Wave three, we're gonna get additional quests, which I'm not sure if they mean like paralogues or something else, but we'll guess we'll have to see. And costumes, and that should be coming out before the end of the year. And there's gonna be a free update to go along with that. Then wave four, which is coming out around April 30th of next year, will have new story content and additional playable characters, locations, and more.
I
So,
am so curious as to what it's
yeah.
going to be. I mean, is it going to be in between the 5 years? That's my only thought. Maybe it's between the 5 years.
Maybe.
That
Like,
would be the logical step. I mean, that'll probably even do the usual way of like actually play as the villains. Who knows?
that could work. Like, and this isn't a spoiler because we know the trailer. I don't know how Dimitri lost his eye.
Oh yeah, right.
So maybe it'll show that cutscene, you know, in absolutely grisly fashion, because why not?
That's funny. I know how Dimitri lost his eye.
Well, there you go. Maybe I didn't get the right support conversation. I don't know. But yeah, I'm curious about that because obviously they could do like the Awakening route or the Fates route and just have a completely like side story like the beach storyline or something like that. But then they say like, oh, we're gonna have additional characters. Where did the characters come from? Because you can recruit just about everyone in the game, more or less. Apparently, you can even get with Sothis, which I'm not sure how.
Oh,
But, and don't spoil it if you know. But, you know, it's like, okay, you can do that. All right. So, like, who's going to be new in this game? That's the question. So.
Well, I'm also currently thinking because, like, with the prior games, like, I'm guessing you can recruit, like, old cameo heroes like Ike or Marv, I'm guessing, or even
Maybe.
Robin.
Maybe. We'll just have to see. But again, the first pack is coming out on October 31st. So once we have more details, we will be sure to let you know. All right, the other really big news of the week came in the form of Pokemon Sword and Shield, which got another new trailer. I want to pause really quick and note that I like this strategy they're doing with like the 2-minute trailers, because they're showing like just enough new content to get us talking, and then they'll die down a little bit. Then they drop another 2-minute trailer. Oh, here's even more details, and it's just building up to the inevitable Nintendo Direct that's coming. So I know, I like that for some reason. You know, like it feels like a different kind of marketing strategy.
Yeah, like just like release a trailer here and there, just basically leave a breadcrumb trail to like just get us enough excitement to get ready for like for the full fledged direct, it feels like. And yeah, it just feels like this is very good enough. Like just a small little bit trailer just to like really satiate the palate, basically, so to speak.
From a I'm trying to find this information standpoint, it was a pain though. I didn't know if I saw all the stuff or not. Like it was the videos were so in like so many different places that it was difficult for me to track them all.
In what capacity? Because it was one trailer.
Well, they had the one. I don't think it was on the official Nintendo YouTube channel.
It was on the Pokemon channel.
It was on the Pokemon channel.
So it was on the Pokemon channel.
I saw like 4 different clips. That was how I absorbed this. Like maybe there was one singular thing, but
there
I
is.
Watched...
I put it on our on the news page that I wrote for Outer Haven. It...
Yeah, I even copy and pasted it in the general chat and in NEP. Yes.
See, I was doing it on my desktop and I saw a bunch of different clips on the Pokemon.
You need to go to the official Pokemon YouTube channel.
Okay, gotcha.
So. But yeah, so to recap what has been revealed, let's start with the rivals. We're going to have 2 rivals in the game. One is BD, that's a guy, and in the Nintendo of America Twitter states that BD is one of your rivals who is skilled at Pokemon battles and has the pride to match. He received his gym challenge endorsement from Chairman Rose. While he clearly is aiming to become champion, he seems to have other objectives as well. So, yeah, take that what you will. And then there's the internet's new favorite love, Marnie! Marnie is one of your rivals who has a competitive side. Together with her partner, Morphika, who we'll talk about in a second, she aims to become champion of the Galar region. She has many passionate fans, more on that in a bit, thanks to her pretty looks and calm, calculated battle strategies. So,
but Marnie, I just want to point out her style of choice of shoes. Her heel is a literal spike. I just want to say that. How the heck you would stand on those things, honestly?
Yeah, life finds a way, Will. Life finds a way. All right, now, as for new Pokemon, we got one pure new Pokemon and then a new evolution of a Pokemon. The new Pokemon is called Morpeko. It is a gerbil slash hamster Pokemon of a sort. And Morpeko has... Oh, here we go. It's from... says that Morpeko generates electricity with the sacs in its cheeks, consuming energy and causing constant hunger. Its ability, Hunger Switch, causes Morpeko to change its appearance each turn. Its signature move, Aura Wheel, also changes depending on Morpeko's form. It could change from an electric-type Pokemon to a dark-type Pokemon via Hangry mode. Yes, hangry mode, and it looks hangry, people. Oh my gosh!
Yeah, so. I think this is just a big plug to like put Snickers commercials in this game. Honestly, like, yeah, like, are you hangry? Yeah, just eat Snickers, and then Snickers. Are you better? Much.
Yeah. Oh gosh! Like,
I thought this was an alternate form of Pikachu when I first saw it. I was like, that's an odd looking change to Pikachu.
No, but it's clearly a reference to the type of Pokemon. It's like, it's basically, you know, your Plusleminin, your Dedenne, your, you know, those kind. It's in the family, but it's not him. And then we got another twist in the form of Galar regional variants, or Galarian regional variants. And we found out that Weezing, Zigzagoon, and Linoon are going to get Galarian variants. And this is important for a major reason. All of the Alola variants were based on Kanto Pokemon. So having Zigzagoon and Linoon is Johto, which means that technically now all Pokemon are able to get variants in certain circumstances. So be aware of that. Now, as many people have been noting online, Weezing looks like Doug Dibidome from the... Fairly Odd Parents cartoon, which I love that reference. It's much better than the drug reference a lot of people were looking at. Okay, gutter, mind, out. Oh, no, it's bad.
Oh, it looks like a... It does.
No,
it
don't
does.
Say it.
I
Don't
won't,
say
but
it.
it does.
Okay, no, yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
but I prefer the Duck Dividome reference because that's just much more hilarious. But then Zigzagoon and Linoon are apparently different in this version because they have to, they're much more of survival instincts, whereas in Johto they were much more laid back Pokemon. They say that they are mo constantly moving around, they never settle down, and they're always, they are a destructive force. They can even knock a car away. So that's pretty interesting. And then, much to my surprise, Galarian Linoon evolves into Gene Simmons. I mean, Obstacoon. Yeah. No, they literally made a Kiss Pokemon, ladies and gentlemen. And no, I don't mean like Love Kiss. I'm talking like Kiss the Rock Band, one of the greatest musical acts in the history of the world, Tyler. All
Oh
right.
my gosh, you disgust me.
You disgust me.
How the heck do you not like Kiss, Tyler? I mean,
I
how do you
listen,
not
they have
respect
like
them?
two or three songs that are good, but like their music's not very good. I'm just
Oh,
gonna
shut
say
up.
it. Oh, I
Stop
mean,
it.
were they impressive? Like, were they important in terms of stage presence? Yeah. Am I gonna listen to any of their songs aside from Detroit Rock City and that's it?
Rock and roll all
I don't
night.
even like that song though. I mean,
You
that's
said you liked that. Oh my
I said
gosh.
it's passable, but
Oh
is it
gosh.
really? Then I got to thinking, is it really?
Jeez. Apparently, you have not heard saw Bill and Ted's awesome adventure of like God made rock and roll for you.
Will,
That's
I
a tough
highly
song.
doubt that you listen to Kiss. I just need to put that out there.
Okay. I just
Hey,
want.
I don't listen to Kiss, but at least I
Okay,
know the
well, there
songs and
you go.
respect them.
Yeah. I also want to
What do
note
you base that
that.
respect on?
I want to note that Kiss has one of the best endorsements ever
They
because they
did.
literally pulled, hold on, they literally pulled in Gene Simmons to do a Dr. Pepper commercial
Yes.
because he is a doctor. All
Yes,
right.
legit,
So,
legit. He's a legit
yeah.
doctor.
That
Trust
was a
me,
good
I'm a
argument,
doctor.
and we were arguing about this on our Slack chat.
Yeah.
And also, Todd did win this argument, I will say. This was the first time I've ever lost an argument because he said that Kiss met Scooby-Doo, and
They
that's
did.
true, and that's factually that does make them not overrated. So,
It's
and
scientifically
also,
accurate.
instead, alongside Scooby-Doo, they have more or less have international presence. I mean, heck, they even did like collab with one of a female group in Japan with Monomotapa Z is like, yeah. I don't know about you, but again, Kiss still has that international presence.
Anyway, so getting back to Obstacoon and not Gene Simmons, who apparently actually approved of this Pokemon in an offhanded way. So yeah, there you go. But this is interesting because none of the Galar sorry, not none of the Alola forms were had evolutions. And even though in Unova that no not Unova, Sinnoh. Yeah, Sinnoh, we had like the evolved form of Magmar and Tangela and Electrobust, Electivire, you know. I never liked those because that just felt like a random evolution where this feels a little more natural because it's a Galarian variant. So that shows that it's the region that changed them enough to evolve, which opens up all new possibilities for whatever other Galarian variants we have. So we're going to be talking more about the designs because someone on this panel does not like a lot of the looks of these Pokemon. So,
I'm gonna come out and say it. It's me, and I don't like any of them.
yeah, I know. I know. It's okay. Now, I am curious about this one, this point with you. Another thing that came out after the trailer was the reveal of Pokemon Jobs or Poke Jobs. Basically, Nintendo released that press statement saying that in the Galar region, it's very common for people and Pokemon to work together, which we've seen in the other games before. Many corporations and universities request the help of Pokemon through what are known as Pokemon jobs. Basically, you'll go to Pokemon centers, you're going to find a Rotomi, and you're going to use your Pokemon in your boxes to accept jobs around the Galar region. When they do the jobs, and if they're specifically suited for the jobs, they'll not only get to help people, but they'll get experience in return. So you're training them without actually having to have them on you. And you'll get experience points, base points, and certain other things. And the more jobs you do, the more jobs will open up and the more Pokemon you can train.
I really
So,
like that. I thought that was
yeah.
a great idea. Because I mean, grinding Pokemon is, even with EXP share, a pain. And this is a good way to be able to kind of quickly catch somebody up to your team, or if even post-game, if you're like, oh, you know what, I want to mix up and go with a mon I've never used, then this is a smart way to be able to do that.
And I just, for me, this is, we've seen this technically since I believe the Johto region where they would show Pokemon working with humans. Like you always see like a Machoke or a Machamp at a construction yard, and you would you would get the inference that they're helping, and then you would see occasionally Pokemon on like ships, and of course in the anime you see it all the time. So this is actually really cool. It's an expansion of the Pokemon world that makes sense because you feel like you've seen it before.
Right.
So again, just like in Three Houses, it's the subtle details that just make it even better. And so I look forward to seeing how this plays out in the game.
I do, and not to beat a dead horse, a horse that is very, very dead, but
Are we
I.
talking Ponyta or Mudsdale, or what are we talking here?
Okay, we
No,
didn't still
we're
get the
talking
grim
about the
details.
worst game of all time. I hope that, and I don't expect it to be. I hope that it's not like Xenoblade 2's job system where you just
For
end.
frick's sake. Gosh.
I do. I hope it's not like you send out your blades and then they just come back and it's like mission accomplished, which is what it's going to be like. I just, at that point, it might feel more like busy work than anything else. I mean, it's not a big deal at all. Like, I do still think it's better, a better system than having them rot in your box, but I wish that there was a little more engagement involved in. I think it'd be really cool if you could see them, if they're saying, okay, I need help in whatever the main town is, and then you go to that main town and there's a construction site and your Machamp is carrying stuff. I think that'd be really cool. I don't expect it, but I think it'd be
That
cool.
would be cool. That would be cool. Oh, hey, Will, do you know what we call people like Tyler?
Gosh.
Haters?
I really get angry every time I see somebody say, play Xenoblade 2 on Twitter. I hate them. They just
Play
automatically, I get
Xenoblade
mad.
Chronicles 2. Play it.
Yeah, I see that all the time. I'm like, no, don't. It's the worst game of all time.
It is
No,
not.
play it. Play it.
Sonic the Hedgehog 2006 is the worst game
Hey.
of all time.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Thank you. This is why I'm the host. Anyway, moving on. Let's talk Evo 2019. All right. There was a lot of cool stuff and weird stuff and heartbreaking stuff going on at there. First of all, Smash Brothers, the Smash Brothers Ultimate Tournament was a huge success. It had the most entrants of a Evo tournament, I'm told, and it had the most views of any Evo tournament in history. Like 275,000 streamers were watching Evo. And of course, that's just the streamers, not just the people who were at the stadium. So it was more than that, technically. And MK Leo won with Joker, of all people.
This final set, he played against Tweak, who was Pokemon trainer. It was one of the most exciting events I've watched. I mean, it was so good. So in the way it works in Smash Ultimate is in the top eight, it's best three out of five wins, and if you are it, there's winner's bracket and loser's bracket, and if you it's double elimination. So MK Leo got sent to losers, I think, before top eight. Actually, he lost to a Mega Man, and he went on this ridiculous run even to get to the grand finals, and Tweak won the first two games just masterfully. And then in the third game, it's three stocks. Tweak had Leo down. It was three stocks to one in favor of Tweak. And MKLeo turns on the Jets and just pulls off this unbelievable comeback to win game three, coming down two stocks. He wins that. Then game four, it was again, Tweak almost had him. I thought for sure Tweak would just be disheartened and get crushed. But no, he almost beat him again. He missed a forward tilt. He read him right. He didn't have the confidence to throw the move out. If he did with Charizard, he was going to get the kill to win Evo. He doesn't do it. MKLeo beats him, and then from there it was over. I mean, he steamrolled the next four games to come back.
If he didn't catch that, okay, MKLeo was down 2-0, and then he won the next six matches in a row.
Yeah, in
That's
unbelievable
incredible.
fashion. He came back twice in just the highest possible pressure. It was awesome. I tweeted it out. I highly recommend, if you enjoy Smash, to check that set out. It was really, really good stuff.
And so like that was definitely one of the highlights of the tournament. And then there was, of course, the Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle tournament, which for all you Ruby fans out there, the winning player won with Ruby Rose and Yang Xiaolong, which was
Yes.
awesome. So of course all the Rooster Teeth people are loving that. I watched the Death Battle cast today, they were talking about that. And then Dragon Ball Fighters had an epic matchup between Sonic Fox and Ishino, I think.
Yeah,
And
yes,
yeah, Sonic Fox won last year against Ishino, and then Ishino came back and beat him this time to such a degree that he actually cried when he won because he couldn't believe he
yes.
beat Sonic Fox. Sonic Fox is one of the best. So that was pretty cool. But arguably the most interesting part of Evo was a game that technically has nothing to do with Nintendo, but has everything to do with video games. You see, after the Tekken tournament, a certain video played on the screen. You could say that they snaked some people, if you will, because they had the codec call of the light of a lifetime, where Solid Snake came out in David Hayter's voice and said, "That's some dang fine Tekken, Harada," and the crowd, the players are all losing their minds because they're like, "Oh my gosh, does this mean we're getting Snake and Tekken 7?" Which wouldn't be impossible because they got Noctis from Final Fantasy, they got freaking Negan from Walking Dead. The idea of Snake being in the game is totally not unrealistic until Bandai Namco and Evo came out and said, "No, that was just a joke video. We were trying to have fun." Yeah, we didn't think it was fun, and David Hayter didn't think it was fun either, because he made a tweet and go, "Oh, hey, by the way, you didn't ask me to use my voice as Solid Snake," which I don't know how they did that if you think about it, because he's never said Harada in a Solid in a Metal Gear title. But anyway, but yeah, he said, "Don't ever use my voice to promote another game, ever. Don't F with Solid Snake, ladies and gentlemen." Okay.
I could only imagine how it is like when someone uses your voice, which like again, you have copyright over your own voice.
Yes.
So like the fact that yeah, someone uses your voice to like promote or like yeah, with tech and things, like dude, you all like with YouTube, like with anything else, you gotta go talk to copyright, you gotta get the licensing, and this is not how you do things, Evo. What the heck were you thinking?
Yeah, and again, it wasn't even just like a shot of Snake that it was, they did the full codec call.
Right, they were trying to make people think Snake was going to be in the game. I'm going to come out and say it though. I still don't understand how they use, like, was it just an impression of his voice? How could they have used his voice
I
if he
don't know.
never said it? So I'm confused by that part of it.
But it's
And
clearly him.
yeah,
Listen
well,
to it. It's clearly him.
maybe I mean it
well, you
has to be an
can.
impression.
Well, impression of probably soundboards, because you'd be surprised what you can get from soundboards.
I guess if you string it well enough, you can have him in different words saying ha, ra, and da.
Yeah, maybe.
String
That
it
could be.
together, do enough mixing. It's dang, that's some dang fine tech in Harada.
Yeah, but
I
how would they
don't
get
know.
Tekken? What do you, did Snake ever say that's some damn fine Tekken? I
I
doubt
don't
it.
know. I don't know, but like clearly he heard his voice because he reacted like that. I want to know the meeting. All right, I want to
Yeah.
know the meeting where that happened. Like they're discussing, okay, then the finals will be hopefully around this time, depending on the matches. Should we do something big? Oh yeah, we're gonna drop the trailer for the new characters, right? Oh yeah, we could do that. We need to do something special though. I got it. What if we do a Solid Snake trailer saying that's some dang fine tech in Harada? Can we do that? Well, probably not, but we probably won't get in trouble. What's the worst that could happen? Great idea! You know, how did this get approved by the Evo team to get this going? And I don't know.
I
I don't
agree,
know,
yeah.
but it's like that. I saw that on Twitter, and I was trying to find out what was happening. And the reactions from the fans and the players were like, "Is this a joke? What is going on? Are you playing me right now? Are we getting Snake?" And it's just like, "What is going on?"
Cue
So,
that clip. They play this like a damn fiddle.
yeah. Oh my gosh, you monsters! How dare you? I'm trapped in a glass case of emotion. So, like, let this be a lesson. And there's been a lot of lessons in video games going around this week. We're not going to get into all of them, but you know your role, know the rules, and don't F with Solid Snake, okay?
Yep.
Okay. So let's just move on and go on to Astral Chain because Astral Chain is, of course, coming out later this month. And we are all looking forward to it. I mean, I know me and Will are looking forward to it. Are you interested, Tyler? I honestly don't know.
I am. I think that game looks really good.
Okay. Well, if you've been paying attention to if you've been paying attention to the Nintendo of America Twitter, they have been having these special, what they call Mr. Taurus case files. And this is from Takahisa Tawara of Platinum Games, the game director of Astral Chain. And he's giving these little tips and tricks about how to do things in Astral Chain, such as how controlling your Legion is. It's a definitively a co-op system. You know, control your player on the left, control your chain on the right, you know, that kind of thing. And then he notes that the story is actually inspired by the police procedurals and animes of Japan. Because, okay, I mean,
Horse,
of course! He goes, the story and art style of Astral Chain is inspired by Japanese police procedurals and science fiction anime. The way you advance through the game is a hybrid system that's greatly influenced by our previous titles. So, I dig it. Alright,
yeah,
and
like
yeah, go ahead, please.
they pretty much like influenced it, like obviously recalled back like in Bayonetta in regards to the action phases of the game. While, for example, in the quest systems, they kind of basically draw reference from Nier Automata's quest system. So they kind of basically put it as a fusion between the game they have done previously, which honestly, like those two games are phenomenal on their own. So you get elements from this, like this is, yeah, it sounds pretty awesome.
And you know, Platinum always has always said they like to evolve their games based on what they've done previously. So that's really kind of cool that they're, you know, using what they learned from Bayonetta and Nier Automata and all these other things to make this insane title, which our dear friend Daisy Delilah is hoping that we get a special Nintendo Direct before the game comes out. I don't see why not, because there's still so much we don't know, and I would hope they like help build interest, especially now that Fire Emblem is out and we're going to be playing it for over a month, but by the time the Astral Chain gets here, so it would just build the hype up even more for that. So I'm excited, and hopefully we'll get more news on that in a bit. I need to go back to Pokemon because we forgot about something. Team Yell.
Oh, Team Yell.
Okay, now, for those who don't know, Team Yell is quote a group of troublemakers who seem to appear the gym challenge wherever the gym challenge takes you, getting in your way up every opportunity. They want nothing more than for Marnie to become champion, and they'll try to instruct other challengers in all sorts of ways. And I saw the most perfect tweet about this, and it goes, "Oh, the bad guys are a toxic fan base. That's perfect."
That was really funny.
You gotta admit, it's clever.
It's very clever. I, for the record, strongly disagree, but I think it was very funny.
Wait, say that again?
I said, for the record, I strongly disagree with the idea behind the joke, but it was still a very funny joke.
Oh, okay. I was about to say. I was like, wait a minute. What are you disagreeing with? No.
It is basically pretty much rabid fanbase, especially rabid fanboys and girls. Like, I mean, again, any
Yeah.
kind of community or regarding to any like fandom, you're not gonna have this bunch of bad apples, sadly enough.
Fire Emblem. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, it's true. Especially after Fates, it's very, very true. But yeah, I couldn't not talk about that. Also, now here's a very interesting piece of news, and this is actually, I feel, an escalation of certain things that have been happening recently, and that is Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo are now all going to be required by their own agreement to disclose loot box drop rates from now on. Now, for those of you who don't remember, ever since about 2017, after the Battlefront 2 fiasco, loot boxes have been a major topic in the gaming world, including getting up in the ranks of law and whether they're actually legal to have because it's technically gambling. And many countries have waited on this since then. But during a special workshop hosted by the FTC, many gaming publishers with Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony agreed that the rates of loot boxes must be disclosed. This will, it says, video game publishers that aren't already receiving this information must conform by the end of 2020. Those who have already agreed include Bandai Namco, Bethesda, Bungie, which is huge, Ubisoft, just as huge, Activision Blizzard, enough said, EA can die. but this is very interesting because this is not they're being forced to do it, they're agreeing to do it. And that's very telling of where they feel the game industry is right now. So that's pretty cool, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I
Yeah.
agree. Loot boxes have been a problem for too long, and I would have hoped that consumers would have kind of worked it out themselves, but I'm glad that there are additional steps being taken.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course, we're going to this whole entire issue of loot boxes is just like, again, it is like, in a sense, it is indeed gambling, and especially like if you have like a gambling problem, that only just makes it much more like much more focused on the spotlight of the audience. And I don't know, like when I see with Animal Crossing with their like cooking system, the cookie system, going to their new items, like yeah, that thing's like. Animal Crossing and loot boxes? Yeah, I never would have thought I'd see that combination. So yeah, now to actually have the odds of it and just basically be more transparent about it. It's very hopeful, but at the same time I'm kind of very skeptical because again, like Nintendo, I really have no troubles with them. It is like the other companies if they will follow suit because again, you know how they can be.
Yeah, so I find it's interesting because I worked for a website that had to cover this the Battlefront and then Need for Speed and Bungie and all everything that was going on with the loot boxes, and to see this development go from, is it gambling, to certain countries actually banning loot boxes and requiring Steam games to be removed until they had their loot boxes erased from the game, and so on and so forth. It's incredible. And now they're all agreeing, like, hey, we need to make sure that people know what they're getting with these loot boxes, which, if you think about it, Fire Emblem Heroes is a kind of a loot box kind of thing, but they've made it clear, hey, it's a 3% chance of getting this thing. And
Actually,
I
quote
know it's a
unquote, it's not
gacha,
like.
but it's still the same thing. It's still the
Yeah,
same
that's
thing.
kind of. That is basically. That's one thing that separates it because, again, they show the
Yeah.
percentage and, like, yeah, the chances. And again, RNG and all that, yes.
So, but I just found that so fascinating, and I'm happy for them. I love it that they're doing this, and hopefully this will make a curve, because loot boxes honestly do suck. I know that, they're saying, oh, it's just a way for us to increase our profits, but there's a difference between, like a Fire Emblem game, the Fire Emblem Heroes, where you can pay but you don't have to, versus something like what happened with Battlefront and Need for Speed and UFC and FIFA and all of those games.
Full-fledged games where you pay full price and then you
Yeah.
have to add more to that. That's where we like, yeah, that's
Exactly.
where it gets money.
Yeah. But again, thank you, Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft, and all the other developers who are doing this. And we hope that this just ushers in a newer age of gaming, which is appropriate, ladies and gentlemen, because it's time for our main event. And the topic tonight is creativity. What defines good creativity? And we're going to start off with Pokemon, given the new trailer and the new Pokemon, but then we're going to discuss what we feel are some of the more creative elements of Nintendo in the past and how it applies to now. So it's time to settle it in Smash. But Todd, why are you doing it and settle it and smash? That just doesn't sound like an argument. That was where you are wrong! Because creativity is subjective, and there are people who are right in terms of creativity, and then there is Tyler.
We make everything an argument on NEP, and I would not
I
have it
wouldn't go
any
that
other
far.
way.
I wouldn't go that far, but
No.
we do when we can't have an argument, we do like to have fun with it. So, like we said, the new Pokemon trailer, and honestly, ever since Pokemon Sword and Shield started to reveal their new Pokemon outside of the starters, Tyler has had a very strong opinion, which is totally fine, about why these aren't the best Pokemon, that they aren't inspired choices, they aren't creative choices. So we are going to let Tyler have his little bit, we're going to counter a little bit, and then we're going to go into n the overall creativeness of Nintendo. So Tyler, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to be on board with this game, and just everything I see about it, I find myself agreeing with the quote-unquote fanboys that are disappointed in what's coming out. I looked at these new designs, and I just the Zigzagoon, it's just a black and white Zigzagoon, and then the Leonun is a like a skunk looking Leonun. And then the what's it called? Oglagoon?
Obstacoon.
Obstacoon is like a
Gene
just
Simmons.
total copy of what they did with Knight Lycanroc in Sun and Moon. It's just a very similar, that weird stance and that feral look. It just I feel like we've seen this before, and I wanted regional variants, and I'm sure that some of them will be excellent. I love regional variants. I think it's a great idea. I didn't find any of these to be particularly interesting. I mean, we look at Al Creamy, which is just literally like whipped cream with a face. And we look at the Corgi Pokemon, which I forget what its name is. I just remember that it just looks like a corgi, a literal corgi. And then the sheep, Mareep, or whatever the sheep, not Mareep, what's the sheep's name? Wooloo, which is, again, literally, it's just a sheep. I feel that Game Freak is kind of mailing in these new Pokemon designs. None of them look intriguing to me. I guess Corviknight might be the best one of all the new Pokemon that we've seen, but I'm trying to even think of, I know they revealed one more in this recent trailer, and I can't even think of it off the top of my head. I mean, the designs do not stick with me at all. I find them to be boring choices. Oh, the Pikachu knockoff, which again, I swear to you, I thought it was a Pikachu just with a regional variant. It has the same puff, the same pouch on its face, the same ears, just everything about this guy. I mean, it flashes me back to Gen 7, which again, a lot of people didn't think Gen 7 had cool new Pokemon. I disagree. I mean, I look at oh my gosh, the Pokemon that slipped across the ground, the ghost type Pokemon, with the bag on its head. Why can I not remember that right now? I've been thinking about it all day. Crap.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Yeah, no, the ghost fairy that if you take the mask off its head, it's got the Pikachu
Oh, that's
fake face.
Mimikyu.
Mimikyu, thank you. Mimikyu is such a cool Pokemon. Forgive me for forgetting its name, though. That was embarrassing. Just that design is really interesting to me. It has a cool story behind it. The same thing kind of goes for Nighttime Lycanroc, which originally was an awesome idea that depending on the game, it would evolve into something dramatically different. There were some pretty cool stuff. I mean, there were some clunkers, of course, but I don't feel that we have any kind of cool new designs in this game. Even the legendaries are just like, we've had legendary dogs before. And like, okay, here's more legendary dogs. I feel like Game Freak has not. They're playing it safe, which is understandable, but they're just. I think it's too safe. I'm not intrigued at all by any of the things that they've unveiled. The Galarian Weezing, I will say, is creative. I think it looks hideous, but I will give it credit. At least it's an interesting idea. The kind of factory-looking oil mongol thing is funny, and it's a good take on that kind of pollution Pokemon. But outside of that one, I'm not seeing a lot of creativity in any of their announcements. I mean, Team Yell again. Your enemy team name is Team Yell. That's what they came up with. Team Yell. It's not good. It's very bland.
Oh, and Team Skull was so much better. Like,
No.
they called Team Skulls because they had skulls on their shirts.
Yeah, no, Team Skull was not much better. But just because one is not better doesn't mean the other one. You know, like it's not. They're both not very good.
I mean, think about it in regards to like names of all the rivals, Team Rocket, Team Magma, all these different things. I mean, in hindsight, it is a very simple idea. It doesn't have to be like overly complicated to say. It does have to be complex.
Well, you're right. It doesn't have to be complex because it's a Pokemon game, but I would like a little bit more. I don't feel like it's ridiculous to ask for them to come up with something a little bit more creative than Team Yell, which is just, again, they just look like punks in goth attire, which we've seen in Pokemon 100 times. I'm not asking for something incredibly ingenious, but I want more than a repeat of what we've got had before. And I just feel like that's all we're getting is a game that is moving from handheld to Switch, which should imply a big step up, and it's just not.
Well, me and Tyler had a big debate on this on Twitter, and I noted that creativity is subjective, which is true to a certain extent. And I do agree that I'm not enamored with a lot of the Galar Pokemon as of yet. There are some ones that I do like. I'll do like the Corviox, the bird, the dark bird. That
Corviknight,
one,
yeah.
Corviknight. I think that's a cool looking look. Cool looking, like whatever. I liked the charcoal Pokemon because
Oh.
I like the backstory to that. See, that's the thing. Sometimes a Pokemon looks stupid. Like when I first saw Mimikyu, I'm like, did they seriously just make a Pokemon that looks like a Pikachu but isn't? And then I heard about the backstory. And then if you've watched the anime with Mimikyu, he's like the scariest Pokemon on God's green earth or Pokemon world. And then you love Mimikyu. And there are other Pokemon that are like that, where you're not enamored with them, but then you see like their backstories or some of the things they do, and they become so much greater. I mean, we all still hate Magikarp, but we know that Magikarp is just a stepping stone to get to Gyarados. So you could argue that some of the creativity was lacking right there in Gen 1. I still think, based on what I mean, not including Galar right now because we haven't seen all the Pokemon. I mean, what are we at right now? Are we at like, what, 15 maybe new Pokemon?
Yeah.
Okay, like so we're not even likely a fraction of where they've been, because Unova is the only one that's had like less than 50 Pokemon, and that was a story reason. I don't think we're getting that in Galar, but I don't know. So even if that's just like one fifth of the Pokemon, that means we still got, 60 Pokemon to see. And so I think that it'll balance out. But if we're talking about some of the worst Pokemon ever, you gotta look at oh gosh, what was Region 5? Gen 5 is still the worst. I mean, we got
Unova?
I always get Unova in the, what was Region
Sinnoh.
6?
Kalos.
Kalos, right, because that's where he meets Serena, one of the best characters ever. Not in the games, in the TV shows. Game Serena was terrible. I don't know
Yeah.
what they did with her, but anime Serena is one of the greatest characters ever. But yes, the Unova region, and I'm just going to type up Unova Pokemon, because they had some of the worst
They did.
Pokemon ever. And like, if you want to talk about uninspired designs, then that's where you need to go. Now, some of it was good, like Snivy. It's not even just superior, the snake and like how that evolved. That was cool. But then you had like, Pansage, Panseer, and Panpour. Oh, it's a grass, fire, and water monkey, which we've had before in different ways. And let's see. There were some good ones, obviously like Gilbert, Excadrill, I liked Palpito, but then there was Timber, Girder, and Conkeldurr. And like that was weird. Oh, and Throw and Sock,
Yeah, those are
which
bad.
was a poor imitation of Hitmonchan and Hitmonlee. Wait, that can't be right. That can't be all of them. Maybe I'm mixing up Unova with Sinnoh. I don't know. But I'll look up Sinnoh Pokemon. But like
Yeah.
that was one of the. It's hard to remember all of
It
them
is, yeah,
already.
no, no, yeah, Sinnoh
But
had
like
Lucario,
I
so
remember
that's passable, but
Vanillice. Like remember Vanillice, the ice
yeah.
cream Pokemon. Like that was a terrible design.
It was. But
It's
that's the
like.
thing. I'm not saying that Pokemon has been awesome in the past with that stuff. Sun and Moon was very smart in its gameplay and how it shifted, changed the Pokemon formula. And I know some people didn't like it as much, and because people are always resistant to change, but I can view that game. I loved it, one. But regardless, I look at that in game and I go, they took a chance. And they kept a lot of the stuff that people loved about Pokemon, but they changed the way we progressed through the story. And it was great. I loved that. And we're just, and maybe, there's more to come on this game, but we're getting close to release. And
Yeah.
I'm not seeing like the Dynamax mechanic. They're giant Pokemon. Like it's
Yeah.
not that's not a Mega Evolutions. Very cool. Like is it super? Is that super genius? I would say not. It seems like something that a lot of people would think. Oh, you know, it'd be cool is if there was one more stage to some of these Pokemon. But it was a really fun idea. Gigantamaxing just doesn't do it for me, and neither does Gigamaxing. I don't even remember the difference between the two.
It
I
was
just,
an extra level. It's
yeah.
an extra.
Yeah, I think that if you look at, for comparison, you look at Fire Emblem Three Houses, right? This game it looks good in at times, but generally speaking, Fire Emblem Three Houses is not a visually stunning game. I mean,
I
there's
would agree with
slowdown
that.
in the monastery, the backdrops are very, very low detailed, but it changed the way Fire Emblem works while retaining what people loved about it. And it's just a totally new and fresh and creative experience. Sword and Shield, it just seems like it's another Pokemon game, and one that doesn't even have the charm that the previous games had.
It's definitely a thing, and I found out what was going on. I was apparently only looking at the first 50 of the Unova region, so once I expanded it, I found such classics as Trubbish and Garbodor,
I thought that was that one.
or how about a Ducklet and Swanna, and my
Yes.
personal favorite, Vanillite, Vanillish, and Vanillux,
Yeah.
because of course you did. Of course you did. Or how about the lovely mushroom Pokemon Fungus and Amoongus, or Frillish and Frillish, Angelicent and Jellicent, and on and on and on. It's just like you want to talk about, or Dwebble and Crustle and okay, Crocodile and Croconaut are legend. All right,
Oh,
like I'm if you
yes.
recall a long, long time ago, I did the Crocorocker app. That was legendary.
Yes.
But still, like those are very uninspired designs. And yeah. This is the danger of Pokemon. I think we talked about this before, but the danger of Pokemon is that after every generation, you're going to have that struggle to do things bigger, better, and more advanced. Like, case in point, in the original games, those are just the base. Work your way up from there. It was awesome. Then in Johto, we had day and night. Different Pokemon come out in the day and the nighttime. That was awesome. We had the legendary dogs running around. That was cool. So you couldn't just find them. They had to basically find you, kind of, sort of. And we had like more technology. And then in Hoenn, we had double and triple battles. And then in Sinnoh, we had rotation battles, which were horrible. And then it just went on and on from there. And some things kept on, some things didn't. And then with of course with Alola, they did away with the gym system, which was totally radical at the time, and they had the trial system. Then they had the Alola variants, and now we have Dynamaxing. And yeah, maybe Dynamaxing won't be the next big thing, but it could still be fun. We haven't played it ourselves, and so I feel that it's fine to judge right now, and I won't deny you your opinion, Tyler, but I do feel that if you played it, you might have a different opinion of it. I didn't like Mega Evolutions when it happened because I was like, "Oh, you're just ripping off Digimon." That's basically what it was, and everybody knew it. And now we can't think of life without it because between the anime and the games, it's become so integral to who we are as Pokemon trainers. Like, "Oh, we had the Mega Evolution now, and then we had the Z moves." And it's when we start to like something, it's hard to think of something that will top it. So I will trust Game Freak enough because they've made so many of these great titles and sold, countless millions of them that they know what they're doing. But I do see your point that some of these are uninspired, like Mark Piku. I do think I like the Hangry mode, but I
Yeah.
almost wish that it was just the Hangry mode.
I agree 100%. I mean, even then, it still just looks like an angry Pikachu, but that design's at least appealing. It's something more unique than what you would expect. Like,
Yeah.
does the original version literally just looks like a Pikachu that like rolled around in coal on one side and got black, and then on the other side, it's just a little tanner. But yeah, just the. I expect more when I look at all these other Nintendo Switch games and how creative they are, how they're bursting with new ideas, and how they overcome the kind of, I guess, the setback with the Switch not being as powerful as other consoles, and yet they still are able to present these fascinating ideas and use the Switch technology to their advantage. And then I look at what Pokemon's doing, and I'm like, this game might as well just be on the 3DS. Like, I'm not seeing Game Freak use the Switch itself in creative ways. I'm not seeing innovative ideas that change the gameplay. I'm not. I'm just there. It's not there compared to every other flagship Nintendo franchise that has seen a release on Switch. They've all been brilliant.
Yeah. So, well, we'll just have to see and just go from there. Now let's talk about where we think Nintendo has shined creatively in other places, or where they have not shined creatively in certain places. And I'll start this one off because I think one of the easiest ones to pick is Mario.
Yes.
Because there are times when Mario is just so dang creative, like Super Mario Maker, where they just enhance the gameplay to an infinite level and made it a lot more fun. And then you look at like something like Super Mario Brothers sorry, Super Mario Brothers U, with like the original version, not the new version that came out. And you know, it was pure Mario, but you felt like you've seen it all before. But then in contrast, you have Super Mario 3D World, which was an amazing gameplay experience, totally used the 3D dynamic to its effect, to great effect. You know, the power-ups felt natural and funny, like the cat suit with, you know, Meowser and all that. That
Yes,
was
yes, yes.
clever. And they've had, and obviously with Mario, they have all the spin-offs, but even the spin-offs, you know, Mario, Paper Mario, which was, like we mentioned, was trending last week. You know, Paper Mario, the first two games were legendary. The third game was good, but then after that, with Sticker Star onward, it was just like they were trying to do the Pokemon thing of just trying to top themselves when they didn't need to. They had the blueprint for greatness with Thousand Year Door. All you had to do is make a comparable story, which I know is hard, but you can do it, Nintendo. I believe in you. Sometimes. And you know, that works. But you know, Mario is legendary. He is the most recognizable game character ever, but there is no doubt that at times they just try and bank on Mario and Mario alone and expect the quality to carry. That's not how it works. That's why the Mario Party franchise almost died before Super Mario Party on the Switch, which again has sold almost 3 million units, which is more than any of the other games in the lineup in a very long time. So, like, that's impressive. But they did that because they worked on the quality and not just on the Mario Party name, because they knew it wasn't even close to what it was beforehand.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Like, Mario is just, again, as it's pretty much hit on the head right there. It's just they've done so much things with Mario, is to the point like you kind of expect that there are gonna be some great titles. I mean, Mario's always been known for quality, but at the same time, you also know that they're gonna just could be banking on them just like for the sake of like yeah, like with Sticker Star or like the like there no there is definitely no doubt that there Mario has some definitely some lower quality games that has been made for him. And yeah, like I still can't believe that we're already past like Mario 10 Mario Party until like Super Mario Party. It's just like yeah, it's that's one thing I can't help but wonder about Nintendo sometimes. It's just like they are always known for such quality, but to the point like I can't help but also feel like there are sometimes just feel like they are cutting corners in terms of like designing or something else that like well basically the magic that they're basically known for in the first place. I mean, as you said, Thousand Year Door was trending on Twitter and everybody wanted it to be made again. And I don't know, they want something, some consumers want something like that. And for Nintendo, like not really like I don't know, making something of similar quality or heck, even just porting it over. That's like one thing that people just want. And so in terms of creativity, like I just can't help but wonder, like it's just again, like it's a Nintendo thing. Sometimes they do very well, and sometimes they just like flop. So that's always one thing I always do question.
I'm not looking for every game to be a unique, you know, masterpiece of, oh wow, this has never been done before. This is amazing. Of course, games like that are phenomenal. But I would look at I point to Celeste as a game that is incredibly creative, and it's a platformer. The games like Celeste have been made 100 times, but the way that they crafted the story and the way that they crafted the gameplay and had those two things blend together, that was something I had never experienced before in such a meaningful way and on such a serious topic like mental illness. It was a incredibly refreshing game with a great art style as well. When we talk about, you know, Thousand Year Door, using that as a Paper Mario as an example of creativity gone too far, I think that's a really good point. Nintendo outthought themselves on that game. And you don't always have to kind of push the boundaries and shake up the formula to the point where it's unrecognizable. I think that that was kind of the flaw, one of the flaws of that game.
No, Thousand Year Door was a masterpiece. We're talking about everything after that.
So that's yeah, sorry, that's what I misspoke. I was the Sticker Star
Yeah,
and
Sticker Star.
Color Splash. Yeah, Thousand Year Door was phenomenal. But when people are asking for a new Paper Mario game, I disagree with Miyamoto when he says we're not going to make a game unless it's something that's never been done before, because there are other ways to come up with a creative Paper Mario title than to change the entire gameplay and make combat basically pointless and, Will I say Sticker Star was creative? Yeah, I mean, they thought outside the box. Doesn't make it fun. Creativity doesn't always lead to a fun product.
The box is there
But,
for a reason, Miyamoto.
right. I mean, you have to be smart about how you break out. Like, a creative Paper Mario game does not have to totally shift the system like that. There are plenty of ways that you can approach the game and still make it, okay, this is a refreshing experience, but it's something familiar. I think that's what Pokemon is lacking. I think there's nothing that's, wow, this is new. It's just very much, this is something I've done 100 times, and it doesn't even seem as good as the previous times that I've done it.
Yeah. It's a hard balance, and a great example of this actually was Donkey Kong Country. Because obviously the original Donkey Kong Country games were a complete difference from the original Donkey Kong arcade titles. You know, it was a side-scrolling adventure title and platforming title. It was fun. And then, they did, Donkey Kong 64, which was 3D exploring the world. That was fine. Then they did all the spin-off games, the Donkey Konga and all that. And then in comes Rare with Donkey Kong Country Returns. They just went back to the formula, updated the graphics, added slight twists to things and the visuals and all that, and it was cool, And then of course Tropical Freeze was one of the hardest platformers I've ever played.
That game bursts with creativity. Tropical Freeze,
Exactly.
particular. I actually don't remember Returns as much. I did like it, but Tropical Freeze, that platforming again, that's not a creative idea. I mean, platformers have been around since the beginning of time, as you said, but the way every one of those levels is constructed, everything flows together, everything follows this logical order, and it just makes the world feel so vibrant and alive, and it is bursting with creativity.
Yeah, and but again, even with all that creativity, it still feels like the Donkey Kong Country game.
Exactly.
So like, and that's the balance is like, they had, the Viking walrus and the penguins and everything, and like that was just another form of the tikis and all that stuff, which is fine. But it's, they used that and they built upon that with like the ice levels and the ice bosses and everything that came with that, and that's what made the game shine. And it sold over 1 million units when it was ported to Switch, and it did well enough on the Wii U. So, and that's why a lot of us are expecting a third Donkey Kong Country title. Rare, where are you?
Retro.
Rare.
Retro.
Sorry, retro, whatever.
You can
Retro,
say retro.
rare, whatever. It starts with R and it has letters in it. What do you
Rare's
want?
on all of our minds because, Banjo,
Yeah,
but.
we're right. We want Rare to do Banjo-Kazooie for Switch. So, get on that. But,
Yes.
you never know. He made it into Smash Brothers. Everything is permitted now. So,
Oh,
Assassin's
okay.
Creed reference.
I have to put this sidebar in. Anybody who's played Banjo Kazooie, Bottles' voice when you hold down A and speed it up. That is what Mercedes sounds like in
Oh
Fire
my
Emblem Three
gosh.
Houses. Now,
Oh.
I will have to post it. I'm sure I can find that sound clip. I heard it today, and I was crying because I
Oh,
can't get that out of
buzz
my head now.
off. Okay. Okay, just for
Buzz
that, Tyler?
off.
Just for that, Tyler? Will,
Yes.
would you like to know what Tyler did last week?
Oh, do tell, do tell.
Well, you see, you might recall that our poll question, which we'll get to in a second, was about Fire Emblem as a Game of the Year contender because Tyler forgot to post it the week prior. But I forgave him because he made it work this time, and we got a very interesting answer.
I
But
know.
unbeknownst to us at the time, until I noticed it just after the podcast, he made a bonus poll, and it went like this. Which of the Fire Emblem Three Houses ladies is your favorite hashtag waifus? He put Leon or Leonie, Mercedes, and Shamir. And oh my gosh, Will, Mercedes won handily, and Leonie got like one vote. So
Yes, yes.
he can bash Mercedes and her voice and her purity and her simplicity all he wants. But in the poll that he made, that we didn't even ask him to make, because I didn't want to do this kind of a thing. No, he put it on there to try to prove a point. He lost, and
Yep.
he lost epically, and I'm even taking a screenshot of it
No,
just to make sure he
yeah.
doesn't delete the poll and
No,
try and
I
say that it
know.
didn't
I
happen.
no need. No need. I would like to point out that everybody who voted in that poll, one, you're dumb. Two, you only played the first half of the game. Leonie, I get it. She has short hair and she loves your dad too much. I agree. Part two, Leonie is a babe. And she still loves your dad too much, but she's a babe.
So, in short here, Will, I win. And that is why I am the host.
And I just gotta give props to like the people who voted for Shamir because like yeah, I understand Mercedes is indeed a quality wife, a literal wife candidate.
Thank you.
Shamir, I mean, I'm glad that people also like Shamir just because of her just pretty much lovable personality. So I also
So
appreciate all the people who voted for Shamir. Yeah.
on the note of my victory in matters of love and knowing quality women, which speaks to why I'm single, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler.
Yes, we went through that poll. The other poll was, do you think Farming Free Houses is a Game of the Year contender? And 75% of you said yes, 0% said no, and 25% said maybe. So I'm thinking it's a yes. That's a
Yeah.
yes to me.
Now, what we didn't mention, and we actually, we, I take that back. We mentioned a little in what have you been playing. There was an Accolades trailer for Three Houses because it got such great review scores and everything. And the comment section is just filled with, Game of the Year nominee should be, I can't stop playing this game. This game is addicting, everything else. And so this, even though we still don't have the sales numbers, I really feel that this is a top-tier Switch title. So hopefully, I know it's got to have gotten over a million. Just based on everything we've seen and heard so far, it's got to have gotten over a million by now. But we'll find out soon, hopefully. And then hopefully, depending on what title's released this year, it will be a Game of the Year nominee because it deserves it.
It really does. And it's just, again, just to close out on the note of creativity that we were talking about, there were so many times in Three Houses where things just aren't totally working because the game is so massive and it's running on the Fire Emblem Warriors engine that you're just
Really?
like, yeah, fun fact, I didn't know that, but that's
Yes, it
funny.
is on the
I
war.
did
It was
not
created.
know that.
Yeah, you
It
notice
was
the character
created by Cole.
models.
Yeah, Cole developed by Cole Tecmo. Yeah, yes.
And yet it's still a beloved title because it's so dang creative.
All right. So for this week's poll question, let's tie it to Pokemon. Are you impressed with the Pokemon designs from the Galar region so far? Yes, no, kind of. Fair, Tyler?
Perfect.
All right. So, and of course, let us know how you are doing in Fire Emblem Three Houses. What houses are you playing as right now? Have you completed a run, or are you like Will and just trying to enjoy the journey?
I
So,
stand by that
yeah,
statement.
I know. And of course, what do you think about Pokemon Sword and Shield? Are you excited for Astral Chain? Are you happy with the solidarity of the publishers in regards to loot boxes? And are you with Snake in that Evo totally screwed up? Please say yes. You don't want to tick off Snake. So, for Tellius Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag.